General Government Subcommittee on Ways and Means. We're hearing Senate Bill 5519 this morning, and we welcome you. Maybe we could just go ahead and have Monica Brown from Legislative Fiscal give us an introduction on our committee assistance this morning is Karen Segrist. So with that, we will start the subcommittee.
Mr. Chair, member of the subcommittee, we're going to be hearing from the Employment Relations Board this morning. Last week I distributed a memo to you that there's also a copy before you this morning. It gives you a high-level review of the agency's mission and their budgets. Given the size of this agency, I'll let the agency administrator go ahead and go through the details, as it's a relatively small budget this morning.
Thank you very much, Monica. Please.
Mr. Chair, Representative Johnson, my name is David Steitler. I'm the chair of the Employment Relations Board. I'm also the administrator of the agency. With me today at this hearing are the state conciliator, Wendy Greenwald, board member Rita Thomas, who will be named the chair sometime within the next few months, and staff member Connie Warnock, who helped put together some of these budget numbers. The Employment Relations Board, as Ms. Brown said, is a small agency. It's a fairly small and simple budget. We are the state's labor relations agency. What that means is that our mission is to resolve labor and employment relations dispute that arise under three different laws, the Public Employee Collective Bargaining Act, the State Personnel Relations Law, and a private sector labor management relations law. We also picked up jurisdiction over employee home care workers as a result of a ballot measure, a constitutional amendment, and enabling legislation that was adopted in the last legislative session. Our goals, broadly put, are to timely resolve questions concerning union representation, to resolve collective bargaining disputes without strikes or interest arbitration, and to resolve contested case disputes in a timely and effective manner. We operate essentially as a quasi-judicial administrative court to resolve these disputes, but we also provide alternative dispute resolution processes through our conciliation service to help resolve these issues. The basic functions that we provide are to determine appropriate bargaining units in the public and private sector, to conduct elections to determine if employees want union representation, to mediate collective bargaining disputes, to hear and decide complaints alleging unfair labor practices, and to hear and decide appeals concerning personnel actions. We provide services to approximately 3,000 employers and over 250,000 employees in the public and private sectors in Oregon. In the public sector, which accounts for most of the board's cases and jurisdiction, those case numbers break down in this way. Approximately 30% of our cases and workload go to or are involved with state cases. School districts account for about 25% of our work. Cities, about 20%, counties, about 15%, and other public employers such as higher education, community college, special districts, about 10%. This is the 30th anniversary of the Public Employee Collective Bargaining Act this year, and in 1973, when the bargaining law was passed, the legislature and the governor determined that it would be the public policy of this state to encourage the process of collective bargaining in the public sector, and this agency was created basically to administer that law. We have, as a way of measuring what we do, established a variety of performance measures. Most of these performance measures address timeliness in processing, because the kind of work that we do, time is really of the essence. If there's a strike about to happen or a potential of a strike, it's important that we have a process that gets resolution of that as quickly as possible. If there are unresolved disputes alleging unfair labor practice complaints or personnel appeals, the longer those things go on, the bigger the cost, both to the employer and emotionally to the employee, and sometimes financially to the employee. So our goals are, as far as the performance measures. Our goals are to timely process petitions concerning union representation, and we measure that by tracking the average number of days to process all union representation-related petitions. Second goal is to timely process complaints and appeals, and that's measured by three different goals: the average number of days between the close of a record in a contested case hearing and the issuance of a recommended decision by one of our administrative law judges, the average number of days between oral argument on appeal after an administrative law judge issues their decision, and the time the board issues its final order in the case, and the average number of days between the initial case filing and the board's issuance of a final order.
You have some of those statistics for us, Mr. Steiner.
I do. There, the performance measures are in the budget book at beginning at page 18.
Thank you.
And we, I apologize, Chair Butler, for not pointing that out earlier. Some of these, most of these performance measures are changed from the kinds of performance measures that this agency used earlier. These were developed in fairly close working with the Progress Board to try and develop kind of performance measures that really more accurately measured the effectiveness of what this agency does. Some of the numbers, as you'll see, that the targets, the 2000 values that we've, that's based on actual numbers in calendar year 2000, the 2005 targets, are based on what we believe we can do in order to do a better job and provide more effective service to the people that utilize the services of this agency. Some of these are a little bit, to some degree, I guess there are some of them that are kind of out of our control to some degree. For example, goal number three, which has to do with resolving collective bargaining negotiations disputes without strikes or interest arbitration. The conciliation service, as you can see on the first page of the performance measures, the first performance measure, percentage of collective bargaining negotiations disputes resolved prior to strike or unilateral implementation by the employer. The conciliation service has had an extraordinarily good record at getting those kinds of resolutions prior to strike or interest arbitration. The question, if you look at this, at the second goal under, or the second performance measure under that goal, however, on this, on the next page, performance, a percentage of collective bargaining negotiations disputes involving strike prohibited employees resolved prior to interest arbitration, it is a little more difficult to resolve cases, mediation disputes involving strike-prohibited employees, because there is, even though the law has been changed in some regards, there still is less incentive for employees who are eligible for interest arbitration to resolve their disputes in the bargaining and mediation process, because they know that eventually, if they don't get it resolved, they can go to an arbitrator, and the arbitrator will, in effect, write the party's contract for them. So even though the law has been changed with regard to interest arbitration, and those changes, the adoption of a final offer process, do tend to make the parties narrow their disputes, and it has decreased the number of issues that go to interest arbitration. It's decrease the difference between the parties' positions when they go to interest arbitration. But ultimately, it is a little bit less successful process. If the ultimate goal is resolving disputes, it's a little bit less successful process in resolving disputes, because the parties, unions in particular, realize that they're not going to get any less in interest arbitration than the employer has put in its last best offer. So there's sometimes not so much incentive for them to bargain real hard, because they they are bargaining against themselves at a certain point.
In today's economic environment and climate, that holds true. In other words, the management is still going to make its last best offer with everything it's got, what it believes it has to provide on the table, and then would still go on beyond that.
Chair Butler, that's correct. The way the public employee bargaining process works is that for those employees who are subject to interest arbitration, if their contract remains unresolved after a period of bargaining and after the period of interest mediation, then the dispute will be submitted to an interest arbitrator. Now, obviously, interest arbitrators read the newspaper. They're familiar with the economic conditions in the state and nationally, and those things play into the decisions that the arbitrators make. And in addition, those larger economic forces do have a tendency to shape the party's offers. Unions tend to be, in this economic climate, the union's demands tend to be more realistic than they might be if the local government or the state was really flush with cash. But there's still, I think that historically, if you looked at settlements that are achieved through bargaining and mediation for strike-permitted employees versus settlements that are imposed by interest arbitration, I think that historically you would find that there is a small but measurable difference, with somewhat higher settlements being found in those interest arbitration settings.
I'm not an attorney, Mr. Steidler, so I need to just have you take me through that process. Do you actually then perform through the Employment Relations Board? Do you actually take on the next step after the final arbitration is done here, or is that next step funded from another out of other resources?
Chair Butler, the way the process works is that the parties negotiate the contract as best they can. That's on their own resources.
Mm-hmm.
If they're unable to resolve their dispute through negotiations, they come to us for mediation. We provide the mediation services. That is at least partially fee-supported. Then if they are unable to resolve things in mediation, and the dispute goes to interest arbitration, the parties, we provide them a list of names from which they select an arbitrator, but the parties are responsible for paying the arbitration fee themselves.
So up to that particular time, all of the arbitration has come through your budget, and then as it moves then into the next step, or the mediation has come out of your budget, you provided those services. When they go to the arbitration, then that's at their own on their own checkbooks then.
Chair Butler, that's correct.
Okay, thank you. Please proceed.
The last of the performance measures there relates to a kind of training that the agency provides. This is not a service that's mandated by any of the laws that the agency is required to administer, but is a service that we've found for those parties who choose to use it, we have found that it produces much more meaningful and satisfactory results in the bargaining process, because they're more invested in the way things work, and they tend to be more satisfied with the results. That the interest-based bargaining process is something that is designed on a cooperative sort of mode rather than the adversarial approach that typically happens in collective bargaining. The agency's organizational chart, which appears on page 31 of the budget book, shows what happens to the agency under the governor's proposed budget. There are two positions there that are shaded. One of those is a mediator position, which was originally given to the agency in the 1995-97 legislative session. That position has never been filled because it was reliant solely on revenue generated from fees, and there has never been enough fees to fill the position. So that position has never been filled, and since it's never been filled, we decided this is as good a time as any to propose just eliminating it from the budget, because revenue projections going forward don't indicate that there's going to be enough money to fill it in the 2003-2005 biennium either. The other position that shaded is an office specialist position. This was the position that typed most of the agency transcripts. As I said, we function largely as an administrative court in resolving contested case disputes, and that position did virtually all the transcript typing, produced transcripts both for the agency's use and for the party's use, and also transcripts that are necessary if any of our decisions are appealed to the Court of Appeals. The incumbent in that position resigned last May, and we basically have been unable to fill it since then as a result of all the cuts that occurred through the five special sessions.
I want to just ask a question, if I may, relative to that. That typing of the transcripts is normally done when there's an appeal, and I know that, again, not being an attorney, I know that many times that's ordered as an expense on behalf of one party or another. You were providing this as a service without any compensation in the past?
Chair Butler, no, we did charge for the production of transcripts.
Okay. But now if we don't have a person to do it, we won't be able to provide it, and we can't charge for it.
Chair Butler, what has been proposed in the governor's budget is that although the FTE was eliminated, the governor's budget puts some of that money, a portion of that position's money, back in the budget for contracted services.
I see.
To contract out those only the
reporter or something like that.
The transcripts that are necessary, all we would be limited to producing is the transcript that are necessary for appeal to the Court of Appeals.
Senator Winters is recognized.
You asked the question.
Oh, okay, fine. Thank you. Representative Patrick is recognized. Thank you.
But isn't it incumbent upon the agency to do that? Isn't it incumbent upon the party who's presenting to do that? So couldn't we give a tape of the testimony to whoever wanted to do it as a certified copy? And that happens all the time in the legal world. You give them a tape, the transcription specialist, whoever they contract with, just does the tape.
Chair Butler, Representative Patridge, that's correct. As far as producing transcripts for the parties, that is correct. The agency is required by law to produce a verbatim transcript for cases that go to the Court of Appeals. So we would still have to produce those transcripts. You can't just send, at least based on my understanding, we can't just send the Court of Appeals and it is incumbent on the agency to produce the verbatim transcript.
The appealing party doesn't do that then?
Chair Butler, no. That's based on my understanding of
we've got
the law.
At least two or three people here that are studied in the law, so I don't see anybody shaking their head wildly that this can't happen. So
I don't know is that how it's done in other states as well?
Chair Butler, Representative Patrick, I'm not sure how it's done in other states. I believe that that's how it's done in other state agencies that are subject to the Administrative Procedures Act, that if an appeal is taken to the Court of Appeals on petition for judicial review, that the agency is required to produce its entire record, and that includes a verbatim transcript.
But does the parties bear the full cost of that? I just don't understand why the government would put money in your budget to be able to do that if the parties didn't bear the full cost.
Chair Butler, Representative Patridge, as far as I know, the parties don't bear any of the cost for producing the record that goes to the Court of Appeals. That has been, as forever, as far as I know, the agency's responsibility.
I'd like to check on that. If we could check the Administrative Procedures Act.
Okay.
Because that's unusual that the parties don't bear the cost.
Please proceed.
I mean, even though I know it's the state sometimes that appeals, but I mean...
But then it would appear that that agency that would be making the appeal should provide the record. That's been my brief experience with the those who fly the law, and I
fly the law.
Please proceed.
The instructions that I was given about the order of presentation here today suggested that one of the things the committee would like to talk about is the prioritized list of services, and I provided you with the memo detailing the prioritization. The agency, the chart attached on the next page breaks down by appropriation the three major services the agency provides. It's sort of my view that it's difficult to prioritize between the services that are provided. Most of our work occurs under the public employee collective bargaining law. That probably accounts for somewhere around 85 to 90% of the agency's workload. It's difficult to provide, to prioritize among the services that are provided under that law, mainly because they're all part, even though they're three distinct services, they're all part of one organic whole. If the public employee bargaining law is going to work, you can't really take one piece out and say we're not going to do mediation anymore, but we're going to continue to do the other things, or take out contested case hearings and say we're not going to resolve unfair labor practice complaints, but we're going to continue to have the rest of the process. So those, it seems, I guess, from my perspective, that if you have to prioritize on what this agency does, that the easier way to prioritize is among the three laws that the agency administers. And you can prioritize among those laws on this basis fairly easily. The Private Sector Labor Management Act that the agency administers really doesn't provide, doesn't, is not a significant part of the agency's work, and if we didn't have that responsibility, it's probably not going to result in any earth-shattering changes to the way things work in the real world.
According to your percentages that you gave us earlier, the sources where you're expending your caseload, 30% the state, 25% schools, that'd be K-12, I assume, and then cities, counties, another 35%, 10% other public. So that's 100%. So you're already expending 100% of your time in taking care of the public sector. So probably very little private sector come through.
Chair Bedler, that's correct. There's very little private sector. There is talk. We've heard during one of the special sessions there was discussion of creating a collective bargaining law for agricultural workers, and I have heard that there's consideration of that being made again. Under some versions of that, that responsibility would come to the Employment Relations Board, and if that were the case, that obviously would, those are all private sector workers, and that would obviously increase our jurisdiction and our workload quite a bit in that regard. But as it stands right now, that's not a significant part of our workload. The second least part of our workload is the state, is those cases that arise under the state personnel relations law. That varies between 10 and 15%, perhaps. It depends. In times like this, when there are lots of things going on in the personnel field in state government as a result of layoffs and other changes and reorganizations in agencies, we tend to get more of those appeals than we do in other times, but probably as a good average, 10%, 10 to 12% would probably be a good average about the number of cases. And certainly, as a matter of priority, it could be that jurisdiction over those things. We administer only a part of that law, and the legislature could, as a policy matter, decide that those employees who are covered by that law, which are primarily employees in the management service and employees in the state classified service who are not represented by unions, the legislature could, as a policy matter, decide that it's really a luxury to be able to continue to afford those people the right to have an appeal of personnel actions that adversely affect them and eliminate those services. That's something that could be done.
Now, is that your list of priorities? Senator Winters recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Question. If you, as the manager, responsible, and you were told you only had X number of dollars, and you had to set your priorities, and I understand the issue of the policy that the legislature has directed, but what would you recommend to us as the overarching priority 1, 2, and 3? If it was stated that you had 20% less dollars than what you currently have.
Chair Butler, Senator Winters, what I would recommend in those circumstances is not changing or deleting any of the services, but changing the way in which the services are provided by reducing personnel, so that we would continue to provide the services and thereby satisfy the policy mandates that are in the existing statutes, but that we would perhaps provide them a little more slowly, so that instead of having a contested case hearing get to hearing within 45 to 60 days with an ultimate decision being rendered within 6 months, it might take twice as long to get to hearing, and it might be twice as long before a final order is issued. And for mediation, perhaps instead of getting a mediator out to the parties within 3 weeks to a month, maybe the parties have to wait an extra 3-4 weeks before they get a mediator, and life would go on. It would be difficult, and it would be an inconvenience for those people who use our services. But I'm not. This isn't an agency where somebody is going to die, most likely, if we do things a little slower.
Not like the agency that I have responsibility for.
Absolutely,
and I raised that because my agency is critical. You know, when we start talking about the differences, but I wanted to put it in some kind of perspective of what your recommendation would be to us if we ask you for a 10 to 20% reduction.
Representative Patridge, recognized.
Would it be fair to characterize the similarities in your workload if we were to compare another state agency to maybe what Boley does? I mean, I know you do a different set of law, but I mean, you're dealing with employment-related things, you're having hearings, you have dispute resolution, you have a lot of the similar items that they have.
Representative Butler, or Chair Butler, Representative Patridge, there are some similarities between what we do and what the Bureau of Labor and Industries does. There are some similarities between what we do and what the Workers' Comp Board does. There are some similarities. Those two of the state agencies that I'm familiar with that provide hearing services, those two would be probably the closest. I think that there are significant differences in the kinds of hearings that we conduct based on my understanding, for example, of workers' comp hearings. They're very often half-day or less hearings. Our hearings tend to run multiple days, almost always run multiple days now. Oftentimes in, maybe less so now, but used to be in Bureau of Labor and Industries cases, those cases were often argued, and to the degree they provide any mediation services there, those things are often done without attorneys. It's probably an unfortunate fact of life that almost everything we do now, including mediation, has attorneys involved. So the process I think that we have is maybe a little more legalistic than those other agencies, but there are some similarities.
I was just looking for a means of comparison. I mean, I know that you can't compare apples and oranges, but certainly you can get some baseline assumptions in terms of personnel and staffing. So.
Chair Butler, along those lines, Representative, I was just the other day talking to the person who administers the Washington Public Employment Relations Council, which is our counterpart agency in that state, and they are currently, they have 24 or 25 full-time equivalent positions, and under the governor's proposed budget in Washington, they're kind of going in the opposite direction than we are. Maybe they have more money up there, but their governor has proposed that staff increase to 43 full-time equivalent positions, and my understanding is that their agency is almost entirely generally funded. In terms of the jurisdiction that they have, obviously Washington government, both state, cities, counties, all put together, they're more people in Washington than there are in Oregon, so there are bigger numbers that are subject to their jurisdiction, but the type of jurisdiction they have, the kinds of appeals that they have jurisdiction over, the services that they provide are very similar to what we provide. And this agency, in fact, has gone from when I came to work with this agency in 1992 as an administrative law judge, we had 24 full-time equivalent employees. Under the governor's proposed budget, we have 14. In the 91-93 biennium, the agency's total budget request was $2.9 million. Under the governor's proposed budget, I believe it's just a shade over $3 million. So there's been no growth in the agency's budget in real dollar terms.
It'd be interesting to know what counterparts you mentioned, in addition to Bully, other industry or other represented agencies that resolve the disputes in the state of Oregon. It would be interesting to know if Washington, with its 43 employees, has those other agencies that also provide those services. Do you know?
Chair Butler, yes, they do.
They have
similar agencies, other agencies providing those kinds of services in Washington.
Senator Winters.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It would be interesting to note whether or not they're having a greater number of disputes than what we're currently seeing in Oregon, and maybe that's the driver for the increase in the number of staffing positions that they're requesting.
Chair Butler, Senator Winters, my understanding is that the driving force and the increase in the number of full-time equivalent positions in Washington was based on two or three things. They were legislative acts in their last legislature that increased their jurisdiction basically to match the jurisdiction that the Oregon Employment Relations Board already has. Before last year, state employees in Oregon did not have full collective bargaining rights, and the legislature granted them full collective bargaining rights, and administration of that law was given to the Washington Board. The other thing that occurred in that time was the Washington state legislature adopted home care legislation the same as Oregon has, and that put another significant group of employees under the Washington board's jurisdiction. But that's, again, that's jurisdiction that this agency already had.
Would it be fair to say that perhaps maybe we're doing a very efficient job? You're doing a very good job.
Chair Butler, Senator Winters, thank you, and I think that would be very fair to say.
Thank you. And I had asked Ms. Brown when she and I met last week about the potential of pay-as-you-go relative to the bargaining units and resolving the representational disputes and those kinds of things. Is that all provided? I noticed that there is a rather substantial other funds match. That other funds match is an assessment to the agencies. Is that right?
Chair Butler, there are the other funds component of this agency's budget fall into a couple of categories. Part of it is the state assessment. It's assessment on other state agencies on a per employee per month basis, and that pays for the services that we provide. It's supposed to pay for the services that we provide to the state agency, both under the bargaining law and under the state personnel relations law. Another component of the other funds is fees that are generated both for mediation services and filing fees that are generated by filing of unfair labor practice complaints and answers by parties in those kinds of contested case disputes.
How do those fees compare to the fees that we've actually collected for the current biennium 0103? We're anticipating that the fees will be 11%, which is $334,000 approximately for the next biennium.
Based on our most recent estimates, it appears that the fees are going to be, there is a potential of a small shortfall in the fees for filing fees for unfair labor practices, a shortfall of maybe between $4,000 and $5,000 that we for the current biennium that we will have sufficient revenue in our ending balance to cover. As for going forward, it's a little difficult and has always been a little difficult to project the amount of filing fee income for unfair labor practice cases, because while we can look back and see what has happened historically, it's not always a very good predictor of what's going to happen going forward. Mediation fees, it's been a little bit more predictable because there's been kind of a steady growth in the number of mediation cases we get. We've been, since 99, we've been averaging between 6% and 7% or 6 and 7 more cases per year. So you can project that. You can make a projection with a little more reliability. The unfair labor practice numbers tend to be, they're more cyclical. They'll be up 1 year and then down slightly the next year and then up again. So it's a little hard to predict with the kind of certainty that I know the committee would probably like to see in that regard. But and actually that the agency would like to see, too, because it's revenue that we rely on.
But the $333,000 approximates the current other fee income than fee for service. Okay. And then the state agencies had an assessment of $1.3 million. They actually represent about 30% of your caseload. Is that at 1.3 on a $3 million, that's it's a little more than the 30%. Is that justified then?
Mayor Butler, I'm not sure that I can say whether it's justified, but I can tell you how it came to be that we're in that situation, if you'd like me to explain it.
The question I have is, if it's pay-as-you-go, and I've calculated exactly what the percentage would be, but 1.3 on 1.3 on 3 million is 43%, and the indication was that about 30% of the cases are our state caseload should indicate that maybe the state agencies are being assessed about 13% of the budget more than what their share is, but that's just my observation.
Well, Chair Butler, what I think there are two things. First, the first part answer is that state cases tend to be, we've never used caseload exactly as a measure of workload because cases, while it's an easy number to track, it doesn't really relate very well to the percentage of time that it takes to process a case. State cases involving state agencies, both under the State Personnel Relations Law and under the Public Employee Bargaining Act, tend to take more time than comparable cases arising under our local government jurisdiction. That still doesn't probably justify the difference. It's really hard for me to say because workload is really sort of difficult to measure. But I can tell you that the reason that the situation, the percentage of the budget that is funded by the state assessment has grown, that when the budget was first established, as far as this, what I can track historically, when the budget was first established for this agency after the bargaining law was adopted in 1973, a decision was made to fund part of the agency on the state assessment, and part of the agency would be general fund. And apparently they just made a guesstimate. There's no indication that there was any empirical study done to see that 30% for the assessment was the right number and 70% general fund was the right number. But what happened is over the years, especially beginning in the 1991-93 biennium, there have been continued reductions in the general fund portion of the budget. And that, especially in 1995, a decision was made that general fund would be reduced significantly, and in the place of that would come these fees. Prior to 1995, there were really no fees charged to local government, no fees charged directly to local government. So beginning in 1995, the legislature imposed fees for unfair labor practice filings and fees for mediation services. And those fees were based on projections of numbers of cases, and those projections were, have proven out to be very inaccurate, so that the amount of revenue that was generated by the fees has never, ever come anywhere close to meeting the level of general fund that was taken away that this money was supposed to replace. This was why the mediator position that's is proposed for elimination.
You know, right offhand, of the of that $1.3 million, what share of that, maybe our analysts will know, what share of that may be general fund directed? Do we have a feel for that?
Chair Butler, I'm afraid I don't know the answer.
Mr. Chair, I can give you that information. We can.
Okay. We've been using a figure anywhere 35% to 40%, and I just would like to have some feel as we proceed with that. And if you feel like that the fees for services are going to come in, of course, the fee for services is something we would want to encourage, that the pay-as-you-go, as you'd indicated earlier, you know, if they've exhausted all of the potential mediation that's available to them through the Employment Relations Board, and they know it's not going to hurt to just go on from there, but if they're paying their own freight as they go along, they could go ahead and contest away. And it's too bad that the system doesn't charge them for the excess freight that they incur in that process. So, Representative Patridge is recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would imagine that there are some areas where we have a lot more claims than others. Do we know by state agency how these claims are broken out?
Chair Butler, Representative Tatteridge, the number of cases that we get under the state personnel relations law, which is really where you would be able to break that down in that way, is not really significant enough that you would, you know, it might average 20 cases a year, 15 to 20 cases a year. So you could probably look at that historically and say that some agencies have had more cases than others. If I was going to make a guess without having done any particular research into that subject, I would say that the umbrella agency of the Department of Human Services and its various subcomponents have more cases arise under the state personnel relations law than any other agency, but that's probably not surprising because I think it's quite by far and away the biggest agency.
Senator Winters, did you have a comment?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. How much is in your ending balance, and how much do you keep in reserve?
Chair Butler, Senator Winters, I'm afraid I'm not sure I can answer that question.
I'll provide that information, Senator.
Follow up, Senator?
You give the information to me.
I can give that to you right now.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Okay, and let me just follow up on a line of questioning that Senator Winters and Representative Patrick have both touched on, and that is you recognize that we're looking for all the general fund we possibly can. We're still to meet with our co-chairs from the Senate and the House to find out where they want us to end up in the overall cuts within some of these budgets, but some of them are going to be much greater. Some, it's my understanding that many agencies may even be put on hold for a couple of years in the next biennium. That is not an issue, I don't think, for the Employment Relations Board, but I am seeking about an 11% general fund efficiency. And where would I find that if I were to look at your list of the services that you provide, mediation and complaints and working with the bargaining units, where would I be able to extract any efficiencies totaling 11% general funds out of this and out of 1.4 million? That would be about 150 or 160,000.
Senator or Chair Butler, if I were to suggest where you could get that number out of this budget, the only thing that I could suggest is what I suggested to Senator Winters earlier, and that would be that we could achieve that kind of savings by reducing personnel. I mean, basically 87% of our budget, or maybe even more than 87% of our budget, is personnel services. That's what we do. We just have people provide services. We don't give money in the sense we don't administer grants or administer programs. We just have a staff of board members, administrative law judges, and mediators who provide services. So that's where most of our money goes. The parts that don't go to providing, paying personnel costs go to paying rent, paying travel, because we currently we provide our services where the people are.
Right, so try and get out.
Right, so we'll go over to Ontario rather than make the people from Ontario come to Salem. So
I appreciate that. Mm-hmm. It's just as many miles from here to there as it is.
It is.
Right here I found. Representative Patridge and then Senator.
So, Mr. Chair, are we going to get a recommendation to achieve that then through personnel services for this agency and then give us an impact on how it would affect their caseload in terms of their delay time?
And that's my understanding, Representative Patridge, is that it would affect the delay. I just would like to see if there isn't amongst the list of questions that we presented earlier relative to the kinds of other outside savings that might be obtained. That might be just a very few thousands of dollars, but we do need to have the delay, what that reduction in personnel would do in delaying the number of cases. So that would be that's a very legitimate concern. I mean, if we're going to extend these cases out from 320 days, I think I saw one that was amongst that.
Additional question while you're looking at it.
At 321 days, the target is to 280 days. Maybe it would still take 320 days. Yes, go ahead and follow up, President Patridge.
I stepped in when you were discussing the time on your caseload. Is there anything we can do statutorily to tighten up the time? I heard something as I walked in about there's no motivation to negotiate because of the last best offer in terms of trying to move things forward, or at least that's the sense that I got out of it. Whether that's a true representation of what was said or not, I don't know. But, you know, I've introduced legislation, at least on the House side, in regard to the teachers' unions and the collective bargaining to shorten up the bargaining cycle so that we can get these things done more quickly.
Chair Butler, Representative Patridge, there are any number of possibilities that could be considered to shorten the bargaining process. Prior to 1995, there was no specific statutory timeline for the bargaining process at all. It was just a reasonable period of time, and that was subject to a wide degree of interpretations. The legislature decided that they would impose a bargaining period of 150 days, and
right,
you could certainly decide to shorten that up. It would not, I don't think, affect the question related to interest arbitration, because once they go through the bargaining process, they go through the mediation process, they go through the 30-day cooling off period, how fast they get to mediation, how fast it takes the arbitrator to resolve the dispute ultimately, is usually up to the parties' calendars and the arbitrator's calendar, and those are things that I think might be somewhat difficult to legislate.
Senator Thielman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. In looking at your potential reductions under House Bill 3182. I think in general it looks like your general comments go on along the line of office space, then S&S, then travel for some of your staff people for hearings purposes, which would actually put the burden on other governmental entities to come to Salem for those hearings. And then it goes down to the basically dropping an office specialist, an administrative law judge, and a mediator, and the corresponding impacts to that. The only one I have a real question about is the office space, and that is if you were to give up this office space, as it's explained here, where do you currently have office space?
Chair Butler, Senator Devlin, this document was prepared for outlining these projected or potential reductions, in the preparation of the governor's budget, we've already given up the office space. That's what we have offices in the old Garfield School building over here a few blocks away, and we had offices on two different floors, and we've consolidated. We're going to consolidate at the end of this fiscal year. The staff that's on the third floor will be moving up to join us on the fourth floor.
Now, in particular, that was office space leased from an outside party, correct? And so the
Chair Butler, Senator Devlin, that's correct.
And you no longer have any requirements under that lease for that additional area that you've given up.
Chair Butler, Senator Devlin, that's correct.
Thank you. The reason I ask the question, Mr. Chairman, because I've seen this item sometimes, and this, I think, is a good version of this. When you give up space within a state office building to save costs for an individual agency, it doesn't mean that we've actually saved much of anything, because it just means that we have to spread the cost out over other agencies. But along those general lines, Mr. Chairman, can I continue? Do you think that your list, if you were to provide us a list, would correspond pretty much to this and the type of impacts?
Chair Butler, Senator Devlin, actually, the reduction options listed on this page of this document, reduction option number one is in the governor's budget. Reduction option number two is largely in the governor's budget. Reduction option number three is not. We've had some reduction in travel expenditures, but it's that one was not really put in. Reduction option number four, although we're not laying off an office specialist, that is the position that's on the organizational chart that's proposed for elimination in the governor's budget. So that would bring me to reduction option number five, and in response to the questions of the chair and other members of the committee, as I indicated to Senator Winters, if I was going to cut someplace here, we were told that we had to eat the 11% general fund reduction, it would be, my recommendation would be by laying off an administrative law judge at whatever point in the coming biennium it would take to save the requisite amount of money. And since, as I understood the chair, that was about $150,000. So the cost of an administrative law judge for the biennium is about $190,000. So it would be most of the biennium that we would be laying off an administrative law judge, and the impacts, I could get more specific, not off the top of my head, I wouldn't want to try that, but I could get more specific about, in response to Representative Patridge's question, about what the precise impacts would be in terms of how much delay we could expect to see if we laid off an administrative law judge, what it would do to the performance measures.
Dave, I think we need that. I really believe that, the circumstances which are surrounding our revenue forecast right now are such that, the numbers that we're looking at right now are not good. And with the $244 million downturn, that's a you know, these are the bites that nibble on us about three times. The downturn that we're projecting right now is compressed into a very short period of time as we end this biennium. And so it's a downturn of services and a downturn of the current economy, but it also then projects out into the next biennium. And the concern I've got is that originally our co-chairs said we think that 7 to 8% will be enough. So if we can find 7 to 8% efficiencies in general fund budgets, that probably will be sufficient. That was 1.5 revenue forecasts ago. And my concern is that right now the projected revenue will be less or will approximate the 1999 session, and consequently we need to almost go back to 1999 and see, you know, what the size of the total general fund was in relationship to the total budget at that time. So those are concerns that I have. I appreciate the fact that you're taking the steps to go ahead and consolidate your lease to become leaner, meaner, and cleaner in that regard. But any of these kinds of efficiencies, and relative to the list that I had prepared earlier, that probably is somewhere amongst your presentation of dues and fees and licenses and other kinds of agency efficiencies. I would like to take a look at that. The direct responses to the 15 questions I had there. So, Senator Winters, recognized.
Mr. Chair, I just wanted to go back to the ending balance because I noticed that the 9901 actual, you had an ending balance of 429,377, and then the adopted budget for 0103 was 121.5. And your estimate for 0103 is higher. It's about $277,074. And the governor actually increased over your request of 133,980. Was the increase in 0103 because you were actually getting more fees and so you're going to end up with a larger ending balance? Why the huge variance between what was adopted and what your estimate for 103?
Chair Butler, Senator Winters, at least to the degree that I can speak to numbers, I think that the difference is that there were optimistic revenue forecasts that resulted in the projected or ending balance for 0103, and the truth is this agency has kind of been living on its ending balance for the last several biennia. I think if you track back to 90, beginning with the changes to the agency budget structure with the imposition of fees in 95-97, this agency's ending balance, I think, has shown a continual, the actual ending balance, not projected at the start of a biennium, but the actual ending balances have been going down fairly steadily. And I think to the degree that there are increases, it has to do with to try and offset that.
Actually, I see the reverse. Your 0101, if I may, Mr. Chair,
certainly,
was actually 429,000, and your adopted budget for 0103 was 121.5, and the expectation is that was a little too conservative, that you're going to realize 277. So it's just the it's not step. We're all on the same page. I'm on page 8 of 8.
Mr. Chair, if I may. Mr. Chair, Representative Winters, the other fund's ending balance, this is a small agency, and their other fund revenues have been fluctuating, their estimates have been fluctuating, and even now in the governor's budget, if you see, there's a $220,000 ending balance,
mm-hmm.
And my FAM, as well as LFO and the agency, are, again, looking at this, because the $220,000 ending balance was based on when the governor's budget was created, based on information from the agency. And with regards to this agency, it's a small agency, and I think even in 2003-2005, we need to continue monitoring their revenues and adjust their budget accordingly. And if that answers your question, but what we see here is like 9901, the actuals were high, and it's been sliding ever since.
When will you have the actuals for 0103? Because you have an estimate that is higher than what the adopted budget was.
Mr. Chair, Senator Winters, we cannot have the actuals for 0103 until the biennium is over, but what we can do is we can update the numbers and provide you with the best information we have as of right. The previous month.
So, but your estimate is greater than what you had adopted, what we had adopted.
Mr. Chair, Senator Winters, this was based on information that the agency provided.
Okay.
And if we look at the different revenue categories, like if you turn to page 1 and look under revenues, so you can see the differences in the numbers. If you go to the middle of the page, charges for services, it fluctuates from $158,000 in 9901 to it goes to $205,000 in the governor's budget. So that, and also another change you will see is administration and service charges. There's a significant increase here, and this is based on the increased assessments. So one thing you will see in the governor's budget is the assessments have increased from
$1.35.
Yes,
that's where I'm trying to find it. So it's an increase in assessments.
Yes. And one reason why we have the increase in assessments is because the cost of operations is increased.
Just trying to find where it's at.
Monica, Mr. Chair, members, we have asked the agency to come forward and not only reproject this biennium's estimates, but then again take a look at 0305 of where they are. And yes, has been mentioned, we suspect that it's the assessments that are going up and the other funds, charges for services, are probably falling off slightly.
Just trying to figure out where it's at.
And I have suggested that we get those prior to work sessions so that LFO has a chance to go through those and present that information to you prior to
Thank
making
you.
Decisions.
And that will give you the breakout also then that Satish is going to provide you of the general fund portion of those assessments as well.
Yes. Mr. Chair, the breakout is about 30%, but I'll provide you a more accurate number.
Thank you very much, Mr. Padilla. Further questions? Mr. Steiner?
Mr. Chair, unless the committee has any more questions.
Thank you very much. I would like to go ahead and just following our gavel here, have an opportunity to meet with Mr. Padilla and Ms. Brown, if I may, for just a few minutes as we proceed forward. And I would like to ask about some of the other expenditures within the agency. If there are no further questions, we'll go ahead and hold this over until we can have a work session, and I would like to have also the information regarding the assessments, the agency assessments. Yeah, would you go ahead and do that, Satish? Present the governor's budget, please.
Here. Mr. Chair and members of the subcommittee, Satish Upadhyay with the Department of Administrative Services, and I'll be presenting to you the governor's budget. You should have a copy of my handout in front of you. If you'll turn to page 2 of the document, the governor's budget consists of $3.24 million of total funds. This is a 1.3% increase from the 2001-2003 legislatively approved budget to the fifth special session. The budget also has $1.4 million of general fund. This is an 8.1% increase over the same period. The budget consists of two kinds of funds, as you heard from the agency. General fund is 46.1% of the budget, and all of this is in the local government labor relations program unit. And other funds consist of 53.9% of the budget. Most of the other funds are in the state government labor relations program unit. And out of the $1.6 million of other funds, $1.3 million is supposed to come from assessments on state agencies. Now, major changes approved by the 2002 first to the fifth special session. The agency has had to take some reductions, as a number of other general fund agencies. During the second special session, there was a $26,855 general fund reduction, which is a 2% reduction to the agency's budget. During the third special session, there was an addition of $31,770 general fund and $66,280 other funds. for employee compensation adjustments. This is also used in every agency budget. During the fifth special session, there was a reduction of $48,580 general fund as a prorated reduction. The governor's budget, it continues all existing programs. It gets rid of two positions due to revenue constraints, and it reduces funding for rent and other office expenses due to revenue constraints. And one thing that I forgot to mention here is it also increases the monthly assessment from $1.35 per employee, per state employee per month to $1.63 per state employee per month to enable the agency to maintain its operations. The agency, if you turn to page 5, there are two program units in the agency. 57% of the budget is for the local government labor relations area, and 43% of the budget is for state government labor relations. 84% of the budget is spent on personal services, and 16% is spent on services and supplies. Now, how was the governor's budget developed? You may want to look at page 23 of the governor's budget binder. Basically, the starting point was the 2001-2003 legislatively adopted budget, which consisted of about $2.97 million of total funds. There was a reduction of $26,855 general fund during the 2002 second special session. And there were also base budget adjustments. This consisted of roll-up of 2001-2003 position actions and compensation changes. This program is an increase of $354,500 total funds. Now, this amount, LFO is going to be reducing that amount because the governor has said that there's not going to be any salary increases, a 3% increase that was supposed to be effective February 1st. And we also have a number of essential packages. Package 010 provides adjustments for changes in mass transit taxes and vacancy savings. This is an increase of $9,933. Package 030 provides the standard inflationary increases for cost of goods and services and for state government service charges. It's an increase of $27,701 total funds. Package 070, it's a revenue reduction package, and this is in the local government labor relations unit. There's a reduction of $147,645 other funds and one permanent position, which is the employment relations mediator position due to insufficient revenues. Now, this position has always been a vacant position. Package 081, that also you see in all state agency budgets, it's a reduction of $15,209 general fund and $6,263 other funds for cost of living adjustments for salary range of 38 and above positions. This budget also has a number of program reductions. On the state government labor relations, there's a reduction of $94,181 other funds from personal services and one permanent office specialist position. As the chair mentioned earlier, the position is being reduced, but the services and supplies budget is being increased by $31,397 other funds so that the agency can contract out for transcription services. And there's also an additional reduction of services and supplies budget by $14,985 other funds, and this will come out of employee training, office expenses, and data processing. And most of these reductions are mentioned under the agency's reduction options that we discussed earlier. Under the local government labor relations area, there's a reduction of services and supplies budget by $53,404 general fund and $2,132 other funds, and this is out of rent, employee training, and office expenses. Package 091 reduced the agency's budget by $198,950 general fund and one position. This was as a result of the fifth special session reduction. This again got restored later on, as you can see in package 092, so that doesn't have any effect. So basically, the governor's budget maintains all operations. There are reductions because of decreased revenues, and there's also an assessment increase for state employees from $1.35 per month per state employee to $1.63.
Satish, let me just interrupt you there for just a moment. Relative to 091-092, the fifth special session taketh and then the governor has restoreth here. In that process, what happened to that one position during the fifth special session? Did that particular person go on leave of some kind?
Mr. Chair, the reduction to that position would be during the 03-05 biennium. That was the result of the impact of the reduction taken during the fifth special session. So what we do is we have to biennialize that. So during, I think your question is what happens during the current biennium. The agency has a position, a very important position, vacant. That's their budget person, has retired, and that position is vacant right now, so they haven't filled that. So for this current biennium, I believe it's around $48,000. It is $48,000, and that is coming out partly out of that vacant position.
I see. That's how that was in fact taken with the budget cut and the fifth special session. Okay. Okay. Other questions for Mr. Padilla? Thank you very much. Monica, do you have any responses you need to put in at this time? See, I've been off for 2 weeks, and so I don't know how this goes anymore.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think most of the issues have been covered, and we will follow up on the issues identified as we approach work session.
Good. Thank you very much. No further questions. We'll go ahead and close.